Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're here again today. I'm Corinne Fornari, physician assistant, clinical nutritionist, as most of you know. And we have a special show. Carol won't be with us today, but we have a surprise. We have Dr. Warshawski with us, who wrote a book, and this book, I don't remember what year it was published, but years ago, on naturally healing fibroids. He's updated it, and he continues his whole practice within this philosophy. Now, we have been doing a series on hormones and hormone balance. Well, this is right up that alley, and it has to do with women of all ages. Now, the statistics are between 30 to 70% of females will get fibroids. Now, some of them, it won't bother them at all, and it won't even be noticed, but some of them will have severe, absolutely severe problems. And with that, they're really not able to balance their hormones. And so we're having okay, great. We got it. That's why, Reggie, thank you. That's why I love working with you. We were having a little connection problem back and forth, but now we are. Hi, Dr. Warshawski.
Hi, Corinne.
Hi.
Good to speak with you.
Now, if I missed...
inviting me.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Can you speak up just a little?
I said, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, well, I don't know if I told you, but we did, many years ago when your book first came out, we interviewed you. I interviewed you on Take Charge of Your Health. And this interview was... I had such a response to this interview that I played it over and over again. And every time we played it, we got this amazing response. And so I'm so happy you're back again, although it took a few years.
Yeah, I mean, and things have certainly changed in those years, but I'm certainly happy to be back and, you know, happy to talk about, you know, one of my passions, and that's how to create a healthy life, you know.
Well, Carol and I have been doing a sort of unofficial series. I mean, we haven't called it a series, but every week it comes out to be an unofficial series on balancing hormones on women, on men. It always seems to end up that we're focusing on andropause or menopause or perimenopause or postmenopause. It seems that it goes in that fashion. But fibroids are generally and often affect younger women and then can continue on to perimenopause. But with that as our understanding, Ken, I'm going to ask you just a wide open question. What do hormones have to do with fibroids and the pain of fibroids and the severity of fibroids?
Well, you know, the hormones, I would say, you know, just about all hormones will have something to do with fibroids. No one knows exactly what causes fibroids or any kind of tumor to be, in that regard. But, certainly we've looked at estrogen, and estrogen is a growth hormone. So if there are small fibroid cells and there's an excess of estrogen, we call estrogen dominance, estrogen will grow those cells. Estrogen has never been known to cause fibroids or even things like breast cancer. There's no study that shows that. But if there's a small focus of abnormal cells, estrogen is a growth hormone. Progesterone, in the past, we have believed that progesterone probably can balance out estrogen and reduce fibroid growth. But there is evidence that even progesterone can grow fibroids under the right circumstances. And those circumstances are related to inflammation, because there are proteins in the cell that are affected by inflammation. And when there is inflammation, these proteins and the influence of progesterone will also grow fibroids. And we know that from studies that were done on medications like mifepristone, where mifepristone is the so-called abortion pill that works by antagonizing progesterone. So it's a progesterone receptor antagonist. So if you eliminate progesterone, you could cause a miscarriage. But we also found that using this medication will stop the growth of fibroids. So estrogen is classically the hormone that we think about with fibroids. And certainly because of many factors, women are estrogen dominant. We'll get into that. But progesterone can have that effect as well. And then it's not only these, two ovarian hormones, but adrenal hormones, cortisol, which is the major stress hormone, can affect fibroids. Thyroid hormone, if it's too much or too little, will affect fibroid growth and symptoms like bleeding. And all of these hormones are affected by stress. And, these days especially, we know there's plenty of stress in the world. And whether it's mental, emotional, or physical stress, the body reacts the same way. We've seen a lot of these issues related to COVID. So from the pandemic, concepts that integrative physicians took for granted, like the microbiome, the gut microbiome, are now being accepted and seen as, causative in disease states related to COVID research. So we know that from COVID, the microbiome is affected. We have irregular, growth of healthy bacteria, which leads to things like leaky gut, where we now have, large food proteins and other proteins coming through the leaky gut wall, which attract the immune system. And the immune system gets confused and thinks that these proteins are foreign invaders, so sets up this cytokine storm. Again, another concept we've seen from COVID, the cytokines, these chemicals that our immune system uses to ward off the virus, also gets increased to fight off these other proteins, these healthy food proteins, and this creates an inflammatory state. And then we have like a domino effect, because once we have this chronic inflammation, we have changes in the adrenal hormones, cortisol, we have changes in the thyroid hormones, and then we will see changes in ovarian hormones. And, the first thing we'll see is lack of ovulation. And women need to ovulate monthly to produce progesterone. So we have low progesterone and we get back, so we kind of come full circle to estrogen dominance, which has been shown to grow these fibroids.
It's interesting that what you're speaking about is full circle. I mean, it's just general health, but a very advanced general health, and encompassing the intestines, the limbic system, the brain in terms of anxiety and anger and stress, encompassing the thyroid and the adrenals. That's a whole body treatment, and what we were talking about is fibroids. So yeah. How Yes.
When I wrote the book, you know, a colleague of mine said, you know, you could have written this book about anything.
Exactly. It sounds like the basis of autoimmune disease. It sounds like the basis of chronic fatigue. It sounds like the basis now of fibroids. I remember Dr. Majid Ali used to say, and he'd say it regularly, he'd say, women were not made to go into suffering and doubled over in pain and vomiting once a month. This is an abnormality of our lifestyle. And he would repeat that over and over again. And that's, in other words, that's what you're saying also.
Right. I totally agree with Dr. Ali. I would say that, you know, all of these symptoms that he's referring to, the pain, the bleeding, the mood changes, these are, to me, related to, you know, chronic inflammatory issues. And what we see more and more these days is environmental toxicity. So, you know, I work with patients who are toxic. I mean, we are all toxic. There are hundreds of thousands of chemicals in the environment. Every day there's a new article on a new toxin found in the environment. I mean, just the other day it was microplastics in the air from cigarette smoking in China. You know, and of course the air in China doesn't stay in China. It comes here. You know, we know from wildfires on the West Coast, you know, we have those red skies here in New York, you know, from wildfires in Canada and the West Coast. And that smoke has, you know, mold in it, you know, mold and fungus because of decaying trees burning in these forests. And just an article yesterday on some, you know, heavy chromium compound that's a carcinogen. So these are things that we're seeing now, you know, probably related to climate change. We're seeing more wildfires. We're seeing more wet weather, you know, growing mold. And, you know, I see people every day that are, you know, are toxic from things like mold. We can measure mold. And we see that blood tests that we could do, so we could measure proteins like transforming growth factor is a protein that grows things. And in patients with fibroids, it's usually 3, 4, 10 times the upper end of the normal range. So this is a protein that'll cause fibroids, and it's being shown to be increased by mold toxins in the environment. And mold toxins are also estrogenic. So we're seeing more and more of estrogen dominance related to these toxins. I mean, Rachel Carson wrote about this Silent Spring book in the 50s. She wrote about environmental toxicity and changes in the reproductive systems, not only in animals, but in humans. So she was way ahead of her time, but we're seeing this now. There was just an article recently on sperm counts. You know, when I was in residency back in the 70s and 80s, the lower limit for sperm counts was 60 million per cc. Now the new range goes down to 20 million per cc. And now they're saying, okay, we've got these organophosphates in the environment that are lowering men's sperm counts. You know, we in the integrative community have been talking about this for 50 years.
Exactly. The Environmental College of Environmental Medicine, which would go on for days and days explaining the different toxins and how it affects different parts of the body. It still is, still exists. But now, with all that, how would we begin? And, well, I'm going to ask you this first and then the second. Do you see that you can make a difference in fibroids? Do you see a difference with working with women?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we make differences in many different ways. A fibroid that's already the size of a grapefruit or larger, and we see women who have, you know, an abdominal mass the size of a full-term pregnancy. So, I mean, we work with, you know, very severe cases. You know, the larger the fibroid, obviously, the more difficult it is to get rid of it. Small fibroids, if they're like, you know, 1 to 2 centimeters, you could see those disappear. But when they get to 5, 6, or 10 centimeters, they're never going to go away. But what we do see is that the symptoms, you know, so these are all benign tumors. Very rarely there's a malignant fibroid. And, you know, the only way to tell if a fibroid is malignant from a conventional perspective is to take it out and look at it under the microscope. And depending upon how many cells are dividing, you can then make that differential. But from my perspective, if a woman is working on all these issues that we're talking about, the environmental toxicity and the inflammatory issues, and her fibroid is still growing, that to me is a fibroid that needs to be removed. But most fibroids are benign, and if they're not causing problems, and the problems are pain, growing, you know, bladder pressure, bleeding, if they're not causing problems, you know, they don't need to be surgically removed. I would say the vast majority of patients who do this kind of a protocol become asymptomatic and their fibroids stop growing. So unless
that's wonderful,
you know, the fibroid is a certain size that they don't want to be carrying around anymore, there's nothing that they need to do about it. So we see a lot of success along those lines. There are women who just for some reason, you know, refuse to, they don't want to have surgery. They don't want to lose their organs, their uterus. And, you know, oftentimes when they work through a program like this, that includes, you know, a mind-body spiritual kind of assessment, they come to a realization that they could still do the work of healing themselves. And part of that healing is, yes, I need to remove this fibroid. Yeah, so the healing, you know, healing fibroids, you know, which is the title of the book, you know, takes on, you know, different perspectives for different people. I would say the larger ones never go away, but even with conventional treatment, uterine artery embolization or some of the destructive techniques, the myolysis techniques, they reduce a fibroid by at most 50%. So a 10-centimeter fibroid that's being treated this way is still going to be there. The only way you can take out a fibroid is either a hysterectomy or a myomectomy, removing the fibroid alone. And unless you're working on the underlying issues, the inflammatory, the toxicity issues, the, you know, mental, emotional stress, unless you're dealing with that, the fibroid will either grow back, or even if you do a hysterectomy, these issues will show up in another way. So
now, that's what I was going to ask you, because that's what I've seen in my practice. Women who have had 2 or 3 myomectomies and the tumor comes back. And so you said it very clearly, that the underlying issue has to be dealt with to be able, you know, a surgery is almost, it's a blocking, almost like a hypertensive med. You're blocking the symptoms, you're removing the symptoms, but you haven't even come near the cause to create the change that allows the body to balance itself. So, Dr. Warshawski, when a patient comes to you, when a woman comes to you, how do you begin?
Well, we begin by, you know, listening. So, you know, and I just spoke with
that's
the patient.
Rare.
Yeah, well, that's what she said. you're the first person, the first doctor I've seen that let me speak about my fibroid. And that's what we hear over and over again. You know, we spend, you know, for a new patient, we spend 2 hours. You know, every new patient gets 2 hours, and I sit and I listen to them. I listen to their story. We talk about, you know where the contributors to the fibroid growth could be. You know, and we generally start in the gut. So Hippocrates in 400 BC said life and death begins in the gut. And I don't think I've ever seen a woman with a chronic condition, or a man with a chronic condition, that didn't have a leaky gut, a bacterial imbalance in the gut. So that's where we first start. We work on healing the gut. We work on upregulating detoxification pathways. You know, we work on reducing inflammation. So we do a lot of blood work and other tests to identify these issues, and that's where we start. And then, you know, there is a supplement program that does various things. So, you know, one thing we want to do is we want to starve the fibroid from blood vessels. We want to starve the blood supply to the fibroid. And this has a basis in conventional medicine. There's a medication called Avastin. It's one of these monoclonal antibodies that is used in cancer treatment to, you know, reduce blood supply to tumors. Naturally, there are studies that show that supplements like curcumin and green tea extract will also be what we call anti-angiogenesis factors. So that's one thing that we want to address is the blood supply.
I've not used mushrooms,
but I'm sure there are mushrooms that could be doing the same thing. I use mushrooms for other issues. We want to reduce the inflammation, so systemic enzymes with taking on an empty stomach can be helpful in that regard, and also, you know, things like fish oils. And then I mentioned before that progesterone can institute fibroid growth when there's inflammation in the cell, and there are two proteins called BCL2 and BAX. They're interchangeable. When there's more BCL2 than BAX, it's more inflammatory, and progesterone will have a growth effect on fibroids. If you have more of the BAX, the opposite. So we have found that supplements like resveratrol will push the reaction more towards the anti-inflammatory range. So those are some of the supplements we use. But, you know, they're not as important as things like castor oil packs. So the castor
oil pack, old-fashioned therapy, that wonderful old-fashioned therapy.
Right? Edgar Casey's therapy from
exactly.
The 20s. So we have a new slant on it. So in addition to just applying the pack, we're using this as a mind-body tool. So once the pack is on, I teach the patients a belly breathing technique called freeze frame. It was created by HeartMath. They're a group out on the West Coast that studies stress. And their studies show that when we're stressed, we're more inflamed and we have more hormone imbalance. So this, and belly breathing or diaphragmatic breathing stimulates the vagus nerve, which is one of our special nerves that could switch our nervous system from what we call fight or flight, which is stressful, increasing cortisol and other inflammatory chemicals, and we can switch from fight or flight to rest and digest and repair, sympathetic to parasympathetic tone, by stimulating the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve goes directly to the diaphragm. So when we do belly breathing or diaphragmatic breathing, like a little baby would be breathing in the crib on its back, keeping it nice and calm and quiet, this is also a way of, you know, starting that healing process. So when the pack is on, we're doing belly breathing. And the freeze frame technique itself, you know, talks about breathing in through the energy around your heart. So different parts of our body kind of have a different energy signature. We talk about the chakras, the seven energy centers in the body. And the energy around the area of the heart or the fourth chakra. And these chakras, which we talk about in Eastern traditions, do have a basis in physiology because they're all associated with an endocrine gland and a nerve plexus. So the area around the heart is the energy of unconditional love. So we're breathing in through the energy of unconditional love into the part of our body that needs healing. So we're breathing that in to the pelvic area. Now, we also want to be aware of the energy in the pelvis. You know, which is
now,
second chakra.
I'm going to interrupt just one second because I'm going to ask our listeners to join the conversation. This is something that affects many of our listeners, and their daughters and themselves also. So I'm going to give the number here and ask you to join our conversation. The number is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. This is an amazing opportunity to be able to speak with Dr. Alan Warshawski. And his knowledge is literally breathtaking. I'm sitting here just totally enjoying this. So, Dr. Warshawski, continue, please.
Yeah, so, you know, now I'm talking about the energy around the pelvic area. So this energy is relationship energy. So it's you and the entire outside world, not just people, but your association with job, money, finances, these kinds of issues. It's also about creativity. So what's in your life that you don't want? What's not in your life that you do want? And then, you know, all the abusive issues sit right in that pelvic area. So when you have the castor oil pack on and you're breathing healing, loving energy into the pelvic area, you want to be aware of what might come up, you know, what thoughts, memories, ideas come up that could be related to imbalances in this second chakra. Now, at one point, somebody, you know, said that I was blaming women for fibroids, you know, because I was saying it was their fault for, you know, the stored emotional issues. But this is something we all do. We all store energies of different kinds in different parts of our body. And if they're out of balance, they create illness. So understand, and this is why acupuncture works. Acupuncture works because it's breaking down the blockages in these energy channels that we call meridians. So if we're doing a castor oil pack and something comes up, you want to get it out of the pelvis because it's blocking energy. And Einstein said when energy doesn't move, it solidifies. E equals mc squared is about the interrelationship of mass and energy. So acupuncture is helpful. Yoga, things, you know, pelvic exercises like pelvic tilt or cat-cow or butterfly pose. You know, these are exercises that can open up pelvic energy. And journaling has been shown to be an effective tool in helping to eliminate these stored emotional issues. And these are some of the things that we talk about during that, you know, initial two-hour session. And I have a box of tissues right next to the chair where the patients sit, because invariably something will come up, a memory will come up, something that's been stored that hasn't been looked at will come up. And it's not just hormones, not just the microbiome in the gut. It's that whole body, mind, and spiritual connection that you can work with to not only heal your fibroid, but these are issues that are affecting so many other things.
Now, we have a listener that would like to ask a question. Do you mind?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we're going right. Hi, you're live. Your name, please.
I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Brooklyn.
Can fibroids turn cancerous if they're not taken care of in a timely manner? And second of all, like I was reading somewhere where black women of color used to get perms put in their head, you know, to straighten their hair, and they were saying the chemicals in those perms was causing black women or women of color to get fibroids more so than other ethnic groups. You hear about that?
Well, the cancer situation, there's no evidence that fibroids become cancerous. They're usually, you know, malignant to begin with, and these are the ones that usually grow very quickly. You see this in older women, you know, women that are more closer to menopause. And as I mentioned before, fibroids that continue to grow probably should be removed, because the only way to tell is to look at them under the microscope. You know, black women and women of color tend to have worse cases of fibroids. Part of that is genetic. So there is a genetic component.
There
hasn't been completely worked out, but genetics, you know, women with fibroids will have other women in the family with fibroids. And the chemical situation can also be a factor. So I did have one patient who was, working in a nail salon. So that's, she was a manicurist. And, she was constantly in connection with these chemicals for the nails. And her fibroids were growing until we got her, we had her do some things different to get rid of those chemicals. So, I know that there are studies showing that environmental toxins, especially the mold toxins, are associated with fibroid growth. Other chemicals, other environmental toxins, maybe parabens, phthalates, lauryl sulfates, these are all estrogenic and could also possibly be affecting, fibroids. And part of the protocol that we use is to get women, off of as many of these chemicals as we can.
So the number to call is 212-209-2877. We'd love to hear from you. Now, I was going to ask you, fibroids are one thing, and they're very prevalent in the BAI community, causing a lot of pain. But what about polycystic ovary disease? Is there a comparison between those two physical abnormalities in a woman's body?
I don't know that any studies have been done associating PCOS and fibroids, but we do know that PCOS is the most common hormone imbalance in women. And, these are women who are not ovulating, so their progesterone levels tend to be low. They can be more estrogen dominant. I mean, theoretically that would, potentially grow fibroids. Otherwise, I mean, the conventional treatment for PCOS is birth control pills, which is, again, that Band-Aid that we were talking about. It's the same kind of Band-Aid as the surgery would be for the fibroids, rather than, doing things to support natural progesterone. And, PCOS is also a significant metabolic issue with increased risk of adult onset diabetes and sugar metabolism problems, which would be further, influencing inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So, these are the areas of PCS from a more integrative perspective that need to be addressed.
Yeah, whenever we're dealing with something like this, we have to go back to the basics. So many of us, so many people feel when you say, well, let's adjust your hormones, they feel powerless. They really they feel like it's out of their control, when what you're saying and what we say also is that it is definitely within their control. One treatment of polycystic ovary disease is reducing glucose, reducing insulin. And I've had some amazing results just by those factors. And making sure the bowels were moving. So we have that. But let's go to males. Is this affecting males, and how?
The same way. I mean, you mentioned the andropause at the top of the conversation, and we're seeing more and more men as they get older. And even now I'm seeing, men in their late 40s and 50s that, start looking like women. I mean, they have breast development. They've got, large abdominal fat pads. And if you check their hormone levels, their testosterone is low and their estrogen levels are high. So they're converting their testosterone into estrogen. And this is happening, because of inflammation and things like insulin resistance. I mean, the enzymes that make this conversion, the aromatase enzymes, are the same enzymes that are addressed in women who've had breast cancer. So they take aromatase inhibitors like Arimidex to prevent them from making more estrogen. But, high insulin levels, so insulin resistance, which means your body is making more and more insulin. So because your cells are not listening, the message of insulin is to get the sugar out of the bloodstream. But when there's chronic inflammation, the cells become deaf and they don't listen to insulin. So the body makes more and more to get the sugar out of the bloodstream, which is dangerous. But insulin is inflammatory, and insulin will increase the conversion of testosterone to estrogen. So this is bringing on, you know, these major metabolic problems in men. Not only do they not feel strong or focused, they lose their libido, their sex drive, their sexual energy goes down, because in men especially, this is, you know, very much connected with their testosterone levels. But not only are they losing their testosterone, but the estrogen levels, you know, may be associated with prostate cancer. So, I mean, the studies on prostate cancer, you know, are kind of mixed. You know, is it high estrogen levels that are doing this? Is it another form of testosterone called dihydrotestosterone that's doing it? But in any event, we're seeing men who have lower testosterone because they're converting it to something else that's not too healthy for them. And they're having all these other issues. So all the diseases of aging, from cognitive decline to heart disease to arthritis to adult onset diabetes to cancers, these are all chronic inflammatory and environmental toxicity issues. There's nobody that will argue with any of that. So if you could address, if you have a patient, a woman in her 30s or 40s with fibroids, and she can start addressing these issues, or you have a man, you have a 45, 50-year-old guy who's just not feeling it anymore, and you could address these issues, what we're doing is we're optimizing the aging process. So we don't have to have, you know, a lifespan of only 70 or, you know, maybe 75 years in men. We could probably all live to 100 or 120. If you look at these blue zones, these areas the world where people are living to over 100, you know, they don't have these same kinds of issues. They are living a much more balanced kind of a life with fewer inflammatory and environmental issues. But we could all probably start approaching that if we could, instead of band-aiding our chronic issues. And I have nothing against Western medicine. Western medicine is the best for acute problems. If I have a car accident or pneumonia, I want to be in the best Western medical hospital.
Exactly. You don't want to go to a homeopath first.
No. For chronic conditions, it doesn't work. Because it's all about the quick fix. It's not about why are these symptoms here in the first place. And that's why the average medical visit is 16 minutes. These patients are just not getting heard. And that's why, you know, we decide to spend 2 hours so that we could listen and come up with a plan.
How wonderful. Now, there are two callers that are holding. Please hold on. We're going to take the first one. Hold on. We'll pick your call next. Hi, you're live. Your name, please. Hello?
Hello?
Can you, yes, please speak into your speaker.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I was the, if it was me or the first caller. Okay, yes. A question is, I take wild yam. What do you think about taking wild yam capsules, and I also take put on a progesterone cream on. What do you think of that?
What are you doing this for?
To balance, as the doctor said, to balance the progesterone levels, and I was under that impression that I did that.
Uh-huh. Do you have symptoms?
Well, yeah, I'm 67 years old, and
young.
I stopped menstruating young at, I think, about 38. And I, at the time, I used to get really intense hot flashes. And what happened was that I started using progesterone cream, and which is wild yam, based on wild yam. It was wild yam and progesterone cream. And as I'm putting on the cream on my arm, the hot flashes are going down. So it's wonderful. Quite amazing. It really, really worked. But I still, now it's 30 years later, and I'm still using the progesterone cream. And I take four capsules a day of wild yam. Does the doctor know anything about the wild yam or progesterone cream?
Doctor, do you have any thoughts?
So, you know, people used to think that wild yam, you know, could help them make more progesterone. They actually call that the yam scam because you can't convert it in your body. So wild yam, you know, is good for adrenal support. You know, so with all the stress that we're all under these days, you know, anything we could do for our adrenal glands, you know, will be helpful. So wild yam could be helpful for that. And progesterone, I think, is a great hormone to take. I take it myself, actually. I just started it, and it's been helpful for sleep. The only issue with progesterone is I'd say you take a break, take 5 days off per month, just to let your receptor sites kind of, you know, get re-stimulated. But I don't think there's any downside for most people to be taking, you know, an over-the-counter progesterone cream. It's going to help your bones. It's going to help your brain. There are progesterone receptors in your blood vessels, in your heart. So I think it's generally a good hormone to take. And you could take it indefinitely. I mean, there's no, you know, there's no study that says you have to stop hormones at a certain point. I mean, I have women in their 80s that have been taking hormones, you know, for 20 years or longer. And, you know, they may need less as they get older, and we just lower the dosage. But there's, you know, no reason to stop hormones, you know, if you're feeling well on them and you're monitoring, you know, the levels.
Oh, that's great to hear. I have another question. This is related to my daughter. I don't know if it's connected to any of this. My daughter gets, she's 17, and she has horrible, horrible menstrual cycles. I mean, she is in agony. She's double. She cannot function. She throws up 2-3 times a day. Would the castor oil packs help or is there anything else that she can do?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, you know, not you know, actually, you know, meeting with a person, but castor oil packs could be helpful with this before the period. You don't want to do it during the period because it could increase bleeding. I would say for, you know, somebody with these kinds of symptoms, using the progesterone for 2 weeks, you know, before the period can also be helpful. You know, things like magnesium. So anytime you have, you know, a lot of cramping, it's usually, you know, a need for more magnesium. So the castor oil packs would be one thing. I would say try progesterone and magnesium. Now, the only thing about the progesterone that, you know, could be an issue is if a person has yeast overgrowth. You know, so if there's been a lot of stress,
if she has yeast overgrowth.
So, you know, sometimes.
I keep missing it. If she has what?
Yeast overgrowth?
Yeast is, or candida. You know, some women have these yeast infections. If there is yeast overgrowth, and it could be coming from the intestines, sometimes progesterone could make that worse.
So
I'm going to go to the next caller because we only have so much time. We'll give out Dr. Warshawski's number and way to contact him. He's readily available. He's almost a homeboy. He's just right up there in Westchester, about 15 or 30 minutes north of the city. So very easy to get to. So what we'll do that at the end of the show, but I'm going to go to the next caller. Hello, you're live, or did we lose them? Hello.
Caller, that's you.
Oh, they might've stepped away from their phone.
Must've lost them.
Okay, so listen, what type of testing do you do on your patients?
So we do a lot of blood testing. We check for, you know, so the initial evaluation would look at all the hormones. So everything from the adrenal, thyroid, and ovarian hormones. And again, I'm talking about, you know, women in particular and maybe with fibroids. You know, we look at evidence of autoimmunity because with leaky gut, there's very often going to be an increased risk of autoimmunity because the immune system, once it gets confused and starts making antibodies against food proteins, it gets more confused and starts now making antibodies against our own proteins. So we look at autoimmunity, inflammation, hormones, and indicators of environmental toxicity. We also try to do a food sensitivity panel, to see exactly which foods are driving inflammation. The food panel that we do will also evaluate the leaky gut and candida. So those are things that we would do, you know, in general. And then, you know, other testing can be done. There are urine tests for specific mold toxins. You know, there are other kinds of stool evaluations with the gut and microbiome. We do adrenal testing to see if the adrenal glands are, you know, part of the reason for things like fatigue and brain fog and sleeplessness. So we do, you know, this kind of grouping of tests. Obviously, we don't do them all on everybody, but everybody will get, the blood testing done. And we do have a phlebotomist in our office so we can be in better control of our tests, doing it here ourselves.
Yes, there are some difficulties in getting the tests we want in New York. And so that's why I was curious what you focused on in your testing, because I know you do a lot of focused treatments and that would take testing. But we have about 3-4 minutes left. What would you like to leave the audience with, Dr. Warshawski?
Well, what I'd like to leave us all with is the fact that, you know, there's always going to be, you know, challenges in our lives. You know, that's what helps us to grow. And these challenges come from the environment. They come from our own thinking. You know, what we call stinky thinking, worry and regret. And all of these things from the very physical. So they say your stress is everything you eat to who you eat with. And I'd like people to be aware of where they're. So I speak to a lot of people who say, I have no stress. And then you find out all the things that are going on with them. I mean, you mentioned the limbic system earlier.
Yes.
You know, there's so many of us who've had such, you know, some traumas in our lives that have affected the limbic system that's, you know, still going on, including things like fibroids. So what I'd like to do is kind of help people awaken to the fact that there are all these stressors and there are ways of, you know, reducing the negative effects of stress. No one should feel helpless or hopeless that. There are always things you could do to, you know, make your life, the beautiful time that we have, by focusing on what we're grateful for, by basically loving ourselves. So many of us don't have that concept. They don't understand the concept of unconditionally loving themselves. And if you don't love yourself, you're not going to heal. And to me, that's, you know, having a commitment to self-nurturing and, you know, what I call non-judgmental self-awareness. So being aware of, you know, your failings, being aware of things you'd like to do different, not judging yourself, but working on ways of making every day just a little bit better.
Thank you. That's quite beautiful, but also very foundational for all healing, no matter what the problem. It's foundational. Now, how do people get a hold of you or contact you? Do you have your website and your office number?
The office number I'll give you is 914 967 1630. You know, our website is www.drallen, so that's spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, Allen is A-L-L-A-N, .com.
Yes, I really enjoyed being on your website. There was very good information on that website that could get you started toward your path to healing. I'm going to quickly say something. I saw a movie on the Blue Zones yesterday or the other day, and what it showed went from Blue Zone to Blue Zone to Blue Zone. And what I saw were older people, 197, walking up the stairs, down the stairs to get a loaf of bread, then up the stairs, down the stairs to get some vegetables, and then up. So there were two parts of that that it was not brought up in the movie at all. One, the importance of the amount of physical activity that they participate in, but also they were walking in the sun. So they were getting high amounts of natural vitamin D. So we can't underestimate those two. And I want to thank the callers that called in. I really appreciate it. You always make the conversation richer, better, and more insightful. So, Dr. Warshawski, it's always a pleasure. And
thank you very much
for being here. And Reggie, thank you for helping us.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye. So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Thank you.